Hello there, and welcome to this, the 122nd episode of Radio Free Nintendo.
Hi, Johnny.
You may immediately be wondering why you're hearing my voice straight off the bat, as opposed to that of Jonathan Metz. Yeah, this is Greg, UK correspondent. Unfortunately, we had a scheduling nightmare this week. With a few major sporting events and the small matter of a presidential election. We tried very hard to make it work, but in the end, Johnny had to sort of graciously sit aside to try and make it work, and then John had to drop out at the last minute as well. So
bastard.
It's tough. But as you have heard, my usual compatriot James Jones is with me.
Yes, I am.
You are, yeah. Well, it wouldn't be an RFM without you, would it, really? And he's involved in every episode, whether he's on it or not, with the editing. So, you know, he is the show. And joining me as well, as you may also have heard, is two people from our news team, Nick and Francesca DeMola. Say hello, guys.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Yep, now, regular listeners to the show will know that that highest and hardest of glass ceiling, being on RFM without a Y chromosome, has already been shattered.
Bro, it was half shattered.
By Bonnie Rutberg, one of our ex-contributors, but hopefully this show will be somewhat less ill-fated than that one was. We'll crack on with new business, and as has become customary on the show these days, our guests will go first, so I'll throw it over to Cheshire first.
Yeah. All right, so lately, since we moved, I've been spending most of my time playing my review game, Unsolved Crimes, which I do have to give credit, I'm having a lot of fun with. Other than that, I've been playing Castlevania.
Castlevania. I've been playing... Castlevania PSP, that would be the Dracula X Chronicles, is it?
Yeah, no, but fuck Dracula X, game's terrible.
Can't stand it. Play 5 minutes of it? No.
Yeah, we went straight for the Symphony of the Night unlock, and we've just been playing that. So.
No, right, yeah, because it's got the original emulated in it, the original Symphony of the Night, and the original Dracula X, I understand, as well, because it's got the sort of 3D remake. Not a fan of the old school Dracula game, then.
No, not really. Going up the stairs pretty much cut it off for me.
Is that one of those ones where, like, if you don't press up when you jump
exactly
on the stairs,
you just kind of keep walking. Yeah. How the hell do I go up? Yeah, but been playing some Persona 3 too.
Yeah.
Thumbs up to that.
That's not Nintendo stuff, so.
Yeah, I know.
I
don't know if you've listened to the show in recent times, but particularly John Lindemann's list is quite non-Nintendo.
All right. So, Unsolved Crimes, then.
Yeah, I guess so. If you want to, is your duty as a reviewer of the game to go into incredible analytical depth on this, so you understand?
I won't go into incredible analytical depth. However, I think my only problem really with the game is that the game holds your hand a little bit too much. After a little while into the game, you expect, you know, the helper character to maybe stop giving you so many hints, but no. She just kind of guides you through the entire game, which is interesting.
So it's like a long tutorial more than a...
Exactly. It's like a really long figure out how this murder happened tutorial.
It's pretty much like Phoenix Wright without the courtroom battles, from what I've...
It's like what Phoenix Wright's missing. Like, if Phoenix Wright had Unsolved Crimes in it, that would be an awesome combination.
Oh, I see. So kind of like a combination of the courtroom antics of Phoenix Wright plus a more in-depth investigation part.
Exactly. The investigation in this game is slightly shallow, and you always just feel like you're wanting a little bit more out of it, but I mean, it's a decent game. I'm having fun with it, I gotta be honest.
Well, so I suppose more that could be said for some of our review copies over the years or whatever. We got two survivors of the Mystery Dungeon Survivor Club here, so.
Oh, those brave souls.
Founding, no, not the founding member, that goes to Mike Gammon.
Would he be the founding member? How far does it go back? I mean, I assume there was...
See, we sort of got spared the Mystery Dungeon being on Nintendo consoles for a while.
Would there have been any like, on GBA pre the first Pokemon iteration?
I don't think so.
I can't think of any either. Did the first Azuna predate the first Pokemon Mystery Dungeon?
No, because it coincided with the DS release, or close to it.
If you two can
prevent yourselves from sharing and consoling one another a little. Obviously both of you have been quite busy lately with rather important things, but I assume we've got a bit of gaming in, so how's it been?
Well, actually, before we left, we actually got into, as everyone knows, that my Wii Music review went up, and as you may expect, that's a game you kind of have to play with other people, and of course, my wife here and I both
brought some of my friends over, and we had a really good time with it.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with it. It was not what I expected, really. I mean, I think what people kind of led me to believe with Wii Music was more that it was kind of trying to be like a dumbed-down version of a Rock Band or Guitar Hero where, you know, you're not really adhering to a note chart, but you're still trying to play the song. And that's...
Yeah, true.
It's kind of true, but it's more a situation where you're trying to learn how to play, you know, melody versus harmony versus, you know, rhythm.
Yeah.
And you start to learn as you play the game that, you know, it's... In Guitar Hero, you're just playing one instrument, and that instrument is going to be responsible for, you know, a number of different things depending on what the song is.
You also have a note guide showing you how to blend sounds.
Exactly. So when you're playing the game, there's no guideline for what harmony really is. So you need to kind of listen to like the toots in the game, which will kind of steer you in the right direction. And there's even a helper in there that's not necessarily a note chart, but kind of like a rhythm guide. Mm-hmm. So it kind of helps you learn what exactly harmony is. And as you kind of figure that out and get a feel for it, what you start doing is you start, you know, improvising on that. So you may have a beat where you're keeping track and you're kind of mimicking the instrument, and then you'll maybe go quick in one part or go slow and kind of draw out.
Yeah, you can sort of do riffs on different things and add to it. And of course, you can like save it and then send it to a friend, and then they can sort of do things on top of it.
Right.
Is that right? And then
they can do
and then
it
sort
on,
of send it back.
Yeah, exactly. They can do it on top of it because you can assemble like, what was it, 8 pieces or 6 pieces? I can't remember off the top of my head right now, but you can assemble like 8 different instruments or 6 different instruments. I can't remember how many it was, but you could even send it off and they could say like, oh, your melody for the song was garbage. So I, you know, overdid it with a different instrument and gave the song a totally different feel. So you can pretty much take one song and, you know, sub in a different instrument constantly and keep producing like this new sounding version of the song. It winds up being pretty fun, especially when you have like a whole group of people and everybody kind of gets the feel for the game, and then everybody kind of starts putting their flair into the track that they're playing. So
you listen to each other and you create something.
Right. So maybe the person who is playing the rhythm of the song, you know, you get a feel for how they're playing rhythm, and then off of their rhythm, you start improvising as kind of like, an additional layer onto the song. And it really becomes fun in a group. And it's something that, in the single player, it's totally lost. I mean, you just don't get this same feeling, because you could go in and like the first thing I did was I went in by myself and I kind of did every single part of the song, and it just wasn't fun. I mean, it was kind of cool to like hear this.
I guess, I mean, if it's about expressing creativity, if you don't have that kind of feedback with somebody or a group of people, it doesn't, I don't really see how it, you know, because it's, as you say, with Guitar Hero Rock Band, because it's about replicating a pattern, essentially, it's a matter of achievement. an achievement is something you can enjoy individually, whereas kind of expressing yourself is more of a social thing. So, I mean, I could see, you know, why that dynamic is the way that it is.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's exactly true. And it really holds up to, I think, the other games in the Wii series, and, you know, kind of discounting Wii Play a little bit, not really as a part of that series.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Wii Play is, slightly different sort of kettle of fish, I suppose. But we'll be returning to Wii Music a bit later in the show, actually. We've got some in the news segment. But we'll move on. James, I know, are you going to regale us with part two of a three-part series of 360 games? You got a game
I
start.
Will, but I was gonna. I really needed Johnny or John to be here for part two, because part two is Crackdown, which they both.
Well, considering we're rationing this stuff out, you could wait.
I mean, I do have four games to play, which is something I've never experienced in my life. So I'll drop game. I'll drop what was gonna be game four instead of game two. So. I'm not sure if I said what all three games were, but the fourth game came, I guess it was late last week, and it's Luminous Arc 2 it's for both preview and review. It's the problem is it's one of these ROM carts that's absolutely enormous, and I have no packing material for it.
I actually have had experience of this, sadly, with an Oxygen game, but go on.
Yeah. So... what I've got is I have a game that I can't tell you all about that much.
All just the facts kind of stuff, right?
I can give you facts about it. I can give you a general impression, but I can't begin to review it because it's embargoed in that regard. So,
sure, certainly.
What I'm basically going to give my experience with the game. It is that you control... All right, first off, I was quite surprised to see that the game has relatively high presentation values considering it's a bunch of static characters standing in front of static backgrounds. Talking, but
engaging.
Yeah, but it's fully voiced. Well, not fully voice acted. It's heavily voice acted. It might be a better way of putting it. And there is a large amount of just dialogue. But what is weird about it is that the game itself is very, very linear for an RPG. I mean, RPGs are kind of linear, but I mean, it's extraordinarily linear. All the battles, and I mean every single battle, is predetermined. You're going to go fight this battle. And you have to move around the map, and it's this big overworld map, and you sort of drill down so you get to the spot you want. So you go to a general region, then you go to like a part of that region, then you go to a place in that general area that you were in. And then an event happens. So the entire game is one of the most linear experiences I've ever had.
Is there anything that it's kind of akin to, a similar title?
The combat system is very much like Final Fantasy Tactics, the inferior strategy RPG genre.
No, it's an ogre battle.
This will always be.
You know that? Yeah, I think they're releasing the Super Nintendo ogre battle in the virtual console in Japan.
Is it the pinnacle?
No, I appreciate that. I just thought you might appreciate the encouragement.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I've played it. It's a good game. But here's the thing about this game. It's got the Final Fantasy Tactics. Basically, it's got its combat engine. There are, you know, classes of characters, although I don't think you can change their classes. I haven't seen that you can.
Oh, right. Well, I suppose it's quite different. The A2 had quite a sort of comprehensive, like, sort of branching tree structure.
That's one of the big things for that franchise, is that it's got a very huge, just... tree of classes that you really have to work to get the class you want. This game doesn't have any of that. Classes are predetermined based on the characters, and there are a litany of them, and they're constantly adding more characters that you just can't use because there's too many characters already.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I think right now I'm in chapter 6, I believe, and I have like 15 characters.
Wow.
I think, and it's not a fixed number how many you can use in battle. It depends on the battle, but like the last battle, it was 5. So I'm sitting there with these extra characters, and 3 were predetermined for me. So I'm sitting there with like all these extra characters that are completely worthless. So it's kind of...
Is there any sort of strategy involved with picking the other characters, or can you really just throw anyone in there?
They've got their own skills, but really it's just, have you grinded this character up more than the other ones?
Oh, God.
But there's no grinding in this game, because like I said, there's a fixed number of battles.
Right.
It's, you go to the place, that's your next battle. So, it's literally like there'll be one battle per chapter sometimes. That's it. And the battles don't take very long, like 20 minutes. So I'm just sort of breezing through the game right now. I kind of got close to a review note in there, so we're going to back that down a little bit. Story is relatively engaging. And
So that's good. I mean, at least gives you something to keep going with the game. I mean, especially if you're feeling a little tired of the mechanics.
I'm actually playing the game right now, and there's middle of a dialogue scene that's going on. Very long, but it's an important piece of dialogue, and it's not voice acted.
So is there any particular pattern to, you said it was heavily voice acted, is there a pattern to when it is and it isn't?
Dice rolls? I mean, it's amazing. There have been instances where, I thought maybe it's because it was a review copy, but it doesn't appear that way. There are instances where it'll be character A will be voice acted, character B will be voice acted, her response. Character A will respond non-voice acted, and then character B will respond with voice acting, and then character A's counter response will be voice acted. So there'll be one part of that dialogue that's not voice acted.
That's very odd. I mean,
it's really confounding. But
maybe storage constraints, like they literally just had to, you know, sort of cut stuff to fit in, and it was pretty arbitrary.
The thing they could have cut might have been the 30-second full video opening cinematic they've got. But instead, which is very well done, I'll give them credit for that. Instead they went and they cut like random phrases out of the dialogue. But the story is a little slow sometimes, and the weird thing about this game is that it's got a very, you know, noticeable sense of humor to it. It's somewhat lighthearted. So there are some character interactions that are kind of joking.
Right.
And then after chapters, or at the end of chapters, rather, there's these friend point mechanics in which the main character, who is a rune knight, who was chosen, of course, totally at random, even though he's young and inexperienced, which is your standard RPG mechanics, to save the world, has to communicate with one of his party members. And sometimes you get to choose which one, sometimes it's predetermined for you, in order to boost their friend point relationship mechanic. There's that phrase again, by the way. Relationship mechanic.
It sounds like Persona 3.
But the conversations are very fucking weird. And they don't make a lot of sense sometimes. They're like, hey, you know it'd be really great if I had candy right now? And then you get a response of what you respond to that with. And then that'll cause a conversation tree. And then at the end it judges you. Best friend end, or poor end, or whatever. And then it gets weirder because you're greeted with this thing called eye copying, which is a calligraphy drawn like blob that tells a story completely unrelated to anything else, with the slogan at the end, everything's better with a spoonful of copying. I don't understand what's going on.
this is an Atlas published game.
Yes,
right?
It is.
I suppose it's got some of that trademark quirkiness of some of the things they've localized.
Yeah, but This was quirky before it got here. I mean,
I'm sure it was. Yeah, but they localize things that are quirky, and then I guess they kind of have to play up to that in the actual localization itself.
This is
even coming off really hard on this game, it's not bad. I mean, I've put,
well, and obviously you'd be far too early to render a verdict.
Of course. No, but it's not a bad game. I mean, it's just, you know, can't finish that sentence because I would ruin our embargo. Check back on November 18th at tenderworldreport.com.
It seemed like you were going to say that you put a lot of time in it.
Therefore,
it's
not
bad.
Say, but I can't tell you what I was going to say because then we'd get in trouble.
Well, if it was about how much time you were going to put into it, well, that's not going
to
work.
The only real thing else I have to say about this game right now is that there is a lot of story text, a lot of it, like a small book. But, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing. Just sometimes can't answer that question. Or finish that sentence, rather. Sometimes it can insert judgment here that will be in a review on November 18th at tenderworldreport.com.
That's a very, very good tease there.
I'm going to laugh if that review gets delayed for some reason. It's like the 19th. Because this talkback guy is going to get bumped and everyone's going to be upset. And, goddamn, a battle? Are you serious?
Well, how are your other reviews coming along, James?
Oh, they aren't review copies, though. Remember?
Oh, no, I was on about SimCity.
SimCity Societies. I'm going to write a review for that one day whenever I can stay awake long enough to finish it.
SimCity not
Every
collecting.
Time I start that review, I'm like...
So it has literally transferred from the gameplay itself to the review.
Yes!
Well,
I'm like, what can I say about this? It is the most boring game in the history of gaming.
Wow.
Yeah, that's our usual lack of hyperbole from James.
What I will say quite exhaustively is that I made a mistake last week in that its podcast is not, but I've made a mistake in the process of talking about the game I was playing. It was in
NCAA Basketball 08?
It is in fact NCAA 2K8.
Oh, right. So it's
the 2K series, which I can't remember what... Once again, it slipped my mind what it's called.
Fair enough. Well,
I might have implied that it was the other one.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, it was pretty vague. You know, it's mostly just about the menus and things.
The menus I've learned to navigate, and the game controls I've actually learned to play the game. So I can actually physically win games sometimes. It's called College Hoops 2K8. That's it.
There we go. Yes. In the interest of propriety, we now know what game you
and
played last.
Like I said, the menu is not completely unmanageable, as I might have implied before. Just 92% unmanageable.
Fair enough. You've quantified it and everything. That's nice.
All right. That's it.
Yeah, I'll wrap up new business. I haven't got much new. I've just been playing a lot of Castlevania Order of Ecclesia, which I'd very just started playing and during the last episode. Has anybody else picked this up here at all? Obviously, Johnny has.
No, I really
Is it the thing that's turning me off to it is kind of people talking about it being kind of like Portrait of Ruin with a disjointed castle, and I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's this is the kind of, I don't know whether I want to go too far into sort of real spoiler territory here, but the way it kind of, it's kind of got, it's kind of in two halves, and the first half of it is sort of like these little like
listening now if you don't
if you want to fast forward. I want to, if you've yet to play it, and you know, which probably most European people will, because it's not actually out in Europe or anything. I think it's next year, but I think it got delayed, but which is a shame. But anyway, the first half is like these little segments that have chosen from an overworld map that, like, most, some of them are literally just straight lines, as we kind of discussed last week. A few of them are a bit larger, but they're not terribly explorative. They're pretty simple. And then the second half of the game is a castle, as you could have become accustomed to. And so in that sense, it's not too, you know, it's not that different. I mean, in some ways, the difference is more kind of presentational than it is functional. And I don't know, it doesn't bother me that much. I never thought, I don't know how you feel about this, Nick, or anybody else that's played these games in the past, but I don't think they were, the Castlevania sort of take on the Metroid formula was ever quite as successful in terms of having a joined up world as Metroid was. It wasn't, I just don't think it was quite as integral to the game, because you always could like warp between places,
right?
And things, so it was kind of designed that you had these sort of sections, and the traversal and retraversal thing was just, it just wasn't as important. So in some ways, this kind of formalizes that, and you've got these little segments and stuff, and I have no problem with it. And I'm really, the bosses and the difficulty is fantastic as far as I'm concerned. I don't think it's unfair, but it is very challenging, and they're quite imaginative, and it's even like a sort of a puzzle element to one or two of them. So I'm really happy with that. The only downside is just that there's some laziness in the level design, I feel, and it kind of, it gets away from making it feel more like a Castlevania game, in that there's not a lot of platforming. There's just a lot of walking from point A to point B and sort of hacking and slashing enemies in between, which, I don't know, that's not very Castlevania to me.
Right.
I don't know how anybody else feels about that. Just I associate Castlevania very much with platforming. And even if you think of Metroid, obviously, you know, you have these... The way Metroid always works is you'll have a section where it's difficult to navigate by platforming very carefully, and then you'll get an item, and then it won't be so difficult. You know, that's sort of backwards and forwards design. You haven't really got much of that in this. It's everything's generally pretty simple in terms of the layout. The challenges from the enemies and all that sort of thing, which is good. I mean, that part of it is well balanced. The combat system's very good. all of that's great, but I think they're a bit lazy on the level design side, especially if you're going to have these self-contained bits that you don't have to worry about people having to trudge through them again. So you could kind of make them as difficult or as challenging in the platform sense as you want, because it wouldn't be a chore to do them over and over again. So that's a missed opportunity, but overall I'm really pleased with it, and I would advise, certainly if you're a Castlevania fan and you're not fatigued with it, with the series,
Totally understandable if you were.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is still pretty similar to Dawn of Sorrow, and it's probably even more similar to Portrait of Ruin in some ways, although I haven't played that to say for certain. But even still, it's definitely got a real nice layer of polish. There's fewer of those classic sort of over reused assets from Dracula X and Symphony of the Night that have been kicking around for well over a decade at this point. You know, they're not old now.
They're classic.
Yeah, exactly.
They're officially retro.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, obviously these games aren't made on a huge budget and stuff. So,
or any budget.
Yeah, they sort of churn them out and just try and sell them in enough quantities to be profitable. But given that, I mean, it looks really good. It sounds pretty good. The soundtrack's not that memorable for a Castlevania game, but it is good, as you would expect. Right. So, the production values, in terms of what's showing up when you're playing it, seem fine. And it's a pretty well-designed game, apart from the levels, I think. But other than that, great. So I'd thoroughly recommend it to anyone that's on the fence. But although it is pretty hard, I mean, if you're not up for a challenge, it could be a bit tricky, because I've died many, many times in the bosses. It's that sort of thing where you really have to die a lot to figure it out, the patterns and stuff. But when you're dealing with save points and whatnot, that's not that much of a problem for me.
Since Symphony of the Night, more or less, they seem to drop a save point pretty much right before you hit a boss anyway.
Yeah, I can't think of a boss that isn't, if not in, literally, it's in the next room, it's very nearby.
Yeah.
So you've certainly not got any particular sort of annoyance of having to get to the boss and then die several times, and the sort of travel time. It's never like that. It's always at your fingertips. You just have to be prepared to do it. And they're not unfair. They're definitely not unfair. Yeah. If you get the patterns down, and then with the glyph system, the weapons, you can sort of pick something that works. So there's a little bit of strategy to it, and a lot of just, putting the hard work in terms of identifying the patterns and then pulling it off. That's really satisfying to me. I love that kind of old style design, but in such a way that it's not overly frustrating. So that part of it I've read, people say the bosses are not like a negative part. I mean, they make the game for me. I mean, they make trudging through, just hacking and slashing through enemies worth it, as far as I'm concerned, because they're the really interesting bits. But everyone has their own opinion, I suppose. So we'll move on, before we take a break, to DLC Mondays. This week we've got two WiiWare games and a VC game. The first of the WiiWare games is Alien Crush Returns from Hudson. So this is like a revival of their pinball franchise from the TurboGrafx days. It's 3D graphics this time, and it's 800 points, so it's pretty cost effective, considering that's about the same as a Super NES game. And the early sort of returns on this is that there's not that much content there, but it is 800 points, which is not that bad in that sense as a value proposition. And there's apparently there's DLC but it's unclear whether it's going to be sort of, pay and play or not. So I don't know what to tell you about that, to be honest. It's been out in Japan for a while, and apparently there hasn't been any of the DLC yet, I don't think, there. So goodness knows what they're going to do.
We'll see.
Maybe they'll fail to deliver the DLC at all. but you do have online leaderboards, which I feel are quite important for a score attack game like this. You've got versus competition online as well, so that could be quite cool. And you've got like this sort of one player story mode, which I'm guessing is a bit like playing Metroid Prime Pinball in story mode, but it doesn't necessarily sound like there's as much to it.
The proposition of a story mode in a pinball game still seems ridiculous to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically what that means is just playing pinball where you don't just keep playing until you run out of balls and the score's the score. It's kind of like, okay, so you'll face like a boss thing, and once you beat that, you go to the next table, or, obviously it's not, I assume there's some sort of thin excuse for a story, but I hardly think it's integral to the actual game at all.
What do you think?
Yeah, no, it is what I think. We'll see, I guess. We haven't got it in Europe yet. I'll probably...
10 out of 10 for the story.
I'll probably download it when I get it, because I like pinball games, and I like... I've got Devil's Crush.
Greg Williams Collection.
Yeah, I reviewed that. I didn't buy it. It's just a good game. I mean, but, you know, I do like pinball as a general rule. And this is pretty, seems like it'd be decent value. The next one is Home Sweet Home for 1,000 points. This is some sort of interior design game.
Are you serious?
Yeah, oh yeah, entirely serious. Yeah.
What the fuck?
I don't really know a lot about it. It did come out in Europe a week or so ago, and I don't.
Well, it does feel like this is the kind of game that would come out in Europe first.
Mm, yeah, it's got that kind of sort of very casual kind of vibe
stupid.
To it.
Stupid.
Is it a puzzle game, like a puzzle interior design game?
Don't know. I guess it's probably more of a like a...
The puzzle is figuring out why this game exists.
Yeah, truly a mind bender. I guess it's just like a sort of casual kind of, you know, sort of customization game is what I would guess.
Do we know how one wins?
I assume there isn't, like, winning, but I really don't know enough to comment on it.
It's not really a game,
then, is it? 1,000 points,
so
it's not that cheap, you know, relative to WiiWare stuff. Really, that's still pretty expensive for most WiiWare games. Obviously, you've got stuff like Tetris Party and World of Goo that have kind of gone over that, but they are premium WiiWare games, so you have to do something to justify 1,000 points, and I'm not sure this does. And the last title is downloadable from the Wii Shop channel is Space Harrier for the Master System, which I'm guessing is not a arcade conversion of the highest fidelity.
No, it's not.
Has anyone got any familiarity with it? I have a feeling maybe John could have told us about this. So that you mentioned.
Yes, John, because he's old enough to remember it.
Yeah, he was what, like 25 when that game.
He
came
was like
out?
40 when that game came out.
Well, I think you say he's played like Master System for arcade conversions or something, so maybe he played this. But,
yeah,
yeah.
Generally speaking, the Master System conversions weren't good. In many
cases,
they
I mean, were just I guess
bad.
At the time, you know, people just like, you know, there's kind of just the novelty of being able to play it at home. You
Not
know?
Even that. People generally speaking, recognize them as being god awful then, too. I mean,
maybe, no, well, but, maybe they were in the sort of the gaming enthusiast press, but in terms of the consumer level. You know, there may be, you know, people have some fond memories of playing, you know, arcade conversion like R-Type and stuff like that on the Master System. Which...
Yeah, but that wasn't, well, oh, the Master System, I was going to say, that was a good
conversion.
Yeah,
oh yeah, I'm still on about Master System here, that's the point.
But then you said the Master System, I'm like, oh, never mind then.
Yeah, exactly. Oh yeah, I mean, yeah, that's why I'm sure the Turbo's graphics version of R-Type was like a, you know, it always arcade perfect because it doesn't slow down and have loads of levels cut out like the Master System. So I don't know whether it's a similar thing with Space Harrier. I really don't know how great the quality of the conversion is, but
I assume
it's not particularly good. So not a great week. Pretty good, I guess. Maybe Alien Crush could be worth it. I've heard some decent things, but obviously it's pinball, so there's a very definite limit to the scope of its appeal.
It can only be so good.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And only so many people are going to enjoy that, I think. And then interior design and Master System arcade conversions.
Which everyone will enjoy.
Yes, that's what you call broad appeal.
I'm gonna have to follow up on Space Harrier, because I just checked my game list, and it turns out I actually own that game.
Really?
Yeah.
No problem when there are games, you're like, oh my god, I own this?
Isn't there? There's another like space area on the virtual console. Isn't there like a second one for the Genesis or something? Or I don't know.
Yeah, I think there is.
There probably are.
Yeah,
it came
so they're
out
kind
on
of
Genesis,
they're kind
I
of going back
fact.
Into like, Master System releases pretty few and far between, and they have a pattern of now being inferior versions of games you can already get, like Sonic.
Well,
as
that's
well.
That's basically what the Master System was.
Yeah, I guess it was, especially in America, because. It wasn't really that popular there. It was, for reasons I will never understand, very, very popular in Europe, relatively.
Because Europe is weird.
If slightly more positive news coming out of Europe. On Halloween, Castlevania 3, Dracula's Curse or something, the subtitle, came out for the PAL Virtual Console, which is good to see, because that is a very, very fine 8-bit game. I know they all be downloading it off the PAL Virtual Console. It's going to be a terrible PAL version, which I've spoken about how much I hate the PAL stuff before. But I assume, given that, it'll be out in America fairly soon. I was kind of surprised. Well, I guess they could have done a tie-in with Order of Ecclesia, but perhaps more likely they'll do a tie-in with that Judgment fighting game, which
goody.
Has a bunch of characters from Castlevania 3 in it, although they don't look anything like their counterparts.
They look like they're Hot Topic models.
It's so bizarre. It's like, can you imagine, like, yeah, let's do Smash Brothers, but like Yoshi doesn't look like Yoshi anymore, or like, you know, Donkey Kong looks all inner angsty or something. It's just like, what? Why? The whole point is fan service, like taking characters that people are familiar with and putting them together and in some sort of sort of melting pot. And then it's like, well, they're not even themselves anymore. They don't. Have you seen like what the Belmonts look like in this game?
Oh my god, looks terrible.
I know, like sort of bare chest, like weird.
It looks like Ivy from Soul Calibur.
I guess they do a bit, yeah. Like unfortunately, they're male for a start. It certainly just makes
they look like Ivy from Soul Calibur.
Yeah, well, I suppose, yeah, if you want to
talk about the ridiculous.
Well, no, they
bro.
Still have giant chests, they're just giant pectoral muscles.
Unfortunately, maybe
so. We're recommending
that.
This game right now, and in fact, you should go pre order it today.
Yeah, the
impressions no way
on the, I mean, the art looks bad, but the impressions of the game have been universally poor, haven't they, as well?
They've been universally genius. Go pre-order it right now.
Well, yeah, if you like playing bad games, presumably, I suppose you've got that in your back pocket. Like, who knows, maybe they'll have ironed it out. But, I mean, even Igarashi doesn't sound particularly positive about it. It's basically like, yeah, I would like to make something else, but I'm making this.
Well, you know,
it sounds pretty sober about it.
It's funny because we had this, and then we had the Soul Calibur game. And I remember they called each other one day and said, you know, I want to make a game like your game for the Wii with my characters.
That's a great idea. And, if it turns out as well as Soul Calibur Legends, then that's not really very good, is it? But maybe it will generate something positive with a simultaneous release of Castlevania 3 for the Virtual Console. I guess that's pretty much the best we could hope for at this point.
Silver lining. Yeah.
Alright, so that's it for the first segment. We'll be back after the break with listener mail and some news. Okay, and we're back, and we're going to start with listener mail, but first I have to say, it was a very shallow mailbag to reach into this week, as we have only one message. Now, Johnny, for better or worse, has pledged to do this weekly, and this week we have just one message, so I have to implore people, please send more in, there's a pretty good chance it's going to get read. Yeah, at this point, so...
Don't make James start faking emails again.
Yeah, we never like that, you know.
I only admitted to one.
yeah, but the problem is once you admit to one, then so many come under question.
Exactly. I only had to do one because then every question... You know, then we got a Disaster Day of Crisis question, and my immediate response to it, to all of the RFN staff, was, I didn't write this.
Yeah,
and if I had never done that, we wouldn't have to do this.
Yeah.
Now, the amazing thing about the one that I faked was that that particular state, was it Iowa? Yeah, because I said she was a student at the University of Iowa. That particular city flooded the next week, in like the worst floods in Midwest in like 100 years.
Kiss of death, James Jones.
At which point, that just, every opportunity I could beat John. You know, your fan is wet right now.
I think we could listen. You didn't make that remark, but you've like made it now. Clearly, no, you intended to make it personally.
I actually made it to John personally in emails.
All right. Well, there you go. I hadn't thought about that possibility. I thought it was all.
I was trying to agitate him enough that he would mention her in the next episode.
Yep, so that's your look behind the curtain, RFN.
Now, the trick is Sophia really real?
Yes, well, James, you have to read Sophia's email this week, and I guess the listeners will have to decide for themselves whether or not
this is merely coming
through James' lips or from his mind.
Or both.
Yeah.
What gameplay design choice do you... Well, hold on, let me start from the beginning. Sophia writes, if you couldn't figure that out already, What gameplay design choice do you guys dislike the most? Why, for example, I hate gameplay gimmicks that require you to get a certain goal in a certain amount of time, along with the ever-dreaded escort mission. So what element in a game almost makes you want to shut the game and flush the disc down the toilet? Now, I can take a wild guess that Nick and I are going to say the same thing.
It took the words out of my mouth.
And that there might be a follow-up response that, yes, I hate those games too because Wii remotes get thrown around the house when people play them.
Yeah.
So we'll go to Greg on this one.
Yeah, I guess I would have to say anything that really feels so much like it's brutally padding a game for no other reason than to make it last longer. You know, that sort of thing. I mean, obviously the Triforce Hunt was a bit like that, very much like that. Where, I mean, Chris, didn't you have to, like, save up loads of money to pay for a map to then go and find it? You know, it's the two-stage part of it that really got to me. And even bits of Twilight Princess where you ended up, like, sort of trekking across Farron Woods, like, three times, it just felt like, couldn't you have streamlined this? Isn't the game long enough? You know, it just things that feel like it's like, yeah, we had a target in mind for how long it's supposed to last, and then maybe they didn't put everything in they wanted to, but then they make these sort of ad hoc sort of bits just to extend it, and that it doesn't make me want to shut off the game, obviously, with something like Zelda when it's that good outside of it, but that's, it's just annoying. It's just like, well, you know, that's pointless. You know, it would never happen in another medium. You know, almost. I mean, maybe on an album or something, but I don't think it would happen in films. I struggle to see how. Let's just put half an hour in of stuff. I don't know, having said that, Rocky IV, most of that movie is clips. So, from the previous Rocky movies.
You know, I'm gonna go behind the curtain again here. There was clips set to music, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, the montage.
Yeah. I mention this because today I was on the phone with Comcast for an hour listening to music that sounded like it was out of Rocky IV.
Oh, that's bad. And it could also sound like, if it did,
three,
it could also
3 minutes
sound like...
for an hour. I'm just sitting there at lunch with some of my friends going, oh my God, with it on speakerphone.
Nice. Very 80s synth pop rock.
Yes. So when you're watching a movie with that, just imagine that everything you're doing is going to make you stronger by the end of the movie and you'll be fine. All it takes is a few minutes of that music and you become ripped.
Yeah, of course. So obviously the mechanic that you two were referring to was randomly generated dungeons.
Yes.
I think we may as well to make that explicit of the mystery dungeon fame. Chessa, do you have anything in particular, any particular bugaboos about certain game mechanics?
I think bad cameras really aggravate me.
Yeah, that's
like if
you're
doing a really, you know, specific platforming.
Yeah. I guess it's very it's frustrating, isn't it? You know, because it's something you feel like really shouldn't be happening, and then it's causing you to fail or something. It's just
especially when you're in the middle of the jump and the camera turns, and suddenly I'm jumping to the left instead of straight, and I just totally fall off.
The Resident Evil
extensions of that where suddenly I'm walking backwards.
Exactly. And you're like right near a save point, but you have that much life left and you get killed. And
yes.
That's the point where I just shut the game off and just walk away.
Or you're right near a save point, but the camera won't let you get to it.
Yeah.
This is the perfect storm of frustration there.
A much worse offender than Resident Evil of the static camera and really, really bad control is Silent Hill. Yeah, we were playing Silent Hill Origins with a friend right before we moved.
You couldn't even see the bosses. You literally just aimed and shot, and when you heard it go, oh, then you knew you were hitting it. Couldn't see the boss.
That's what I say about love.
You couldn't even, like, have the feeling of completion of watching it die. It just, you know.
Yeah, you'd run to, like, the obscure corner of the room and turn around and hope you hit it.
It's all part of the terror, the uncertainty. You know, there's no life bars in life, ironically.
Yeah, the terror playing the game. That's
Yeah, I guess that's a pretty good one. I think it's this thing, I mean, some of these games that are, like, characterized by that sort of thing, I generally don't play, so...
Yeah.
It's very seldom do I find
I think another one, we were actually talking about it a little bit earlier, was not while recording, but we were actually talking about it while we were having some downtime issues, is collection in games. Mm. And the worst offender, and it came up because we were discussing Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts, and people are upset that it's not like the old Banjo-Kazooie games. And I made a joke, something along the lines of, they want to collect Jiggies, to which I was informed that Jiggies are still in the game.
Well, I would have thought, Jiggies were just like the equivalent of stars in Mario, so
they were the acceptable part
of it. I mean, you know, that was kind of like just the thing that you get when you complete a particular task.
But we then made the jump to Donkey Kong 64 with its collect 772 bananas to open this gate. which is the most excruciating experience in all of gaming, short of a water dungeon in a Zelda game.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Collecting is a bitch. If the game has you collecting a lot of random items just for the sake of extending the game, well, I guess sort of where you're going with it.
That's often the means by which these things are extended, isn't it? Some sort of...
Would you include the Triforce pieces in that?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, that was basically the extending part was the traversal element, making you go to all these places. Rather, I mean, hypothetically, you could have collecting sort of be really annoying, but in quite a confined space. But, I mean, very often it is, right, let's spread a million things out and then force you to, you know, go the whole map over and over again. I mean, even the some of the bits that always end the Metroid Prime games are a bit that way. You know, it's kind of like, okay, so now you have to find these keys to get into the Sky Temple at the end of Metroid Prime 2. That means that you have to basically go back everywhere with the dark visor to find stuff. You know, I mean, it's a bit much. It just, again, I mean, those games are long as it is. Why the need? So, yeah, I mean, those two elements of frustration kind of frequently dovetail together.
I personally felt Phantom Hourglass did that a lot with the Temple of the Ocean King. I personally did not like that element at all. It was just tedious and unnecessary. Just to have to go through and redo everything. I had no problem going back through the area, but to redo everything again...
Yeah, I see, because when it was sort of talked about at first, you know, the whole idea that as you gain further items, you could sort of rationalize your trip through and it would get quicker and...
I think
it should have been designed more so that, you know, if you applied yourself to it, you could make it a lot quicker.
Exactly. You know? It wasn't
I just don't think it was designed... If you're going to do it that way, they could have designed it better to make it work better. Yeah, I think so. The concept is one thing, but then the design falling short is kind of the other part of that failure, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. It was really disappointing, personally.
Yeah, I mean, retraversal, you know, it's a bit like collecting, but in that case, there was no collecting element to it, was there? It was purely just going
what about,
further
like,
down.
The Metroid games that had a lot of retraversal in them.
Well, I think with the Metroid games, see, what they manage when it's done well, not what I was talking about at the end of Metroid Prime games, is that they tend to rationalize it in a few ways because, obviously, say, for instance, if you go through a certain area before you have the screw attack, for instance, it might be sort of painstaking, like carefully jumping to avoid falling into some lava, carefully killing the enemies. And then another time you'll come back and you'll just go, you know, just keep pressing A and you'll kill everything and you'll speed right through it. And so it's not nearly as irksome. And there's a nice feeling of sort of how far you've come in the game, that now look at what I can do. I can just streak right through it. You know, right. So, and then you'll find something else that may be remembered from early in the game. It's like, now I have this power, I can do this. So for me, that's it, you know, again, the design has to live up to the intent, but that works for me. It makes sense. It achieves something.
Yeah.
So I guess with Reach Reversal, that's the problem. It can be done well, but frequently it's done lazily to extend the game, and that's really the entire point. And when I get that sense, that really annoys me.
Right. It seems like Reach Reversal has to be a part of the design decision ahead of time, as opposed to an afterthought to pad the game.
And really sort of carefully thought of in terms of, like, well, you know, the gameplay in some way changes the second time. It becomes quicker or more convenient or in some other way different. Whereas frequently, it does, you know, with the Triforce, you know, you're just sailing to a location as you were sailing to many other locations in the course of the game, except this time it's not broken up or anything. It's just purely do it, do it, do it. It until you've got all the bits,
right?
Yeah, so that's a pretty legitimate one, but that's a good question, and we need more. And it will pretty much get read. I guess certain standards of non-obscenity apply, but other than that, it's pretty.
What are you talking about? I think obscenity is more likely to get you on here.
Yeah, well, possibly.
No, we've had
ones that I could have used, given that this is a pretty rainy day. As far as that, I decided against, like, certain recommendations on how to market disaster. And well, they need all the advice they can get. and people taking umbrage at making fun of the hostile movies. I think the listenership should be pleased that we've skipped past those.
And so, see, if only Evan had been... Was Evan on that episode?
No. Well, there was never any episode. It was never used.
Oh, that's right. Oh. See, that's the kind of question that we should have Evan on for.
Well, I'm sure it could have been fun, but Evan's not here. And anyway, that was several weeks ago. We need more mail. Please send it in. I'm sure we'll be able to read it. And we are doing it weekly. We're holding to that commitment. But now that's done, we're going to move on to the news. And the first item up is the DSi is out in Japan. It came out on November 1st.
Yep.
Which would be somewhere in the region of sort of over a week ago by the time this goes out. But it was sold out, much as you'd expect, big whoop. You know, apparently it sold about 170,000 copies in the first 2 days and then finished out the 200,000 allotment in the next two. And just for a little bit of context, that's against about 140 for the PSP 3000, the launch, what was it, just a couple of weeks before, right?
Yeah, it was just recently.
Yeah, so I guess those two are going to be going at it now. It'd be quite interesting to see that little duel, because obviously PSP's had these little iterations quite a few times between when the DS Lite came out. Now you've got two at the same time, and they're kind of comparable in some ways, although obviously the DSi is more of a market difference. And I guess Nintendo trying to squeeze plenty more sales out of it. I guess it really can't tell much from just selling out 200,000 how well it's going to do. Apparently they had an extensive pre-order program and it was all taken care of without silly lines or anything like that. But now that people have got their hands on it, we can clear up some of the confusion surrounding some of the things that it's been confirmed.
So it is an 80 megapixel camera, right?
Yes, it is definitely 80 megapixel.
There's a zoom lens, actually, that you can attach to the back of it. It's pretty fancy.
It actually takes pictures in 3D space.
Telephoto lens. Yeah, basically, you could be, like, and also you can, like, set it to take photos automatically or whatever. So basically, I think if for instance, the next Spider-Man film were not to be made by Sony Pictures, Peter Parker would be using his DSi to photograph himself as Spider-Man.
Nice.
But sadly, due to corporate greed, that will never happen.
Now, is it also true that the DSi can actually warn you in advance when you are playing a bad game? Because that would be a feature to have.
It might be, but it certainly doesn't have that.
With the 80 megapixel camera, it scans the game and lets you know. Now, what do we really know about the DSi?
So, yeah, the camera is 0.3 megapixel, as we know now, which sounds really bad, but it's not, compared to other portable devices with cameras, you know, it's substandard, but I guess the thing about it is, first of all, it is standard definition, so you're putting it on your Wii, it's not going to look atrocious, you'll be able to have some fun with it there. And I guess the other main restriction, as has been pointed out in the hands-on, is that a lot of the appeal with taking the pictures on the DSi is that you can play around with it in these little apps, tweaking things and sort of making funny pictures out of it and stuff, and really it couldn't really handle higher quality pictures and still be able to do the same thing. That is the speculation. So on two fronts, really, I guess cost saving and just the kind of intention that it is
Think that this is going to be a problem, because what's going to happen is when we go to take these onto the Wii, which they've talked about us being able to do.
Through the SD card. Well, look, it's standard definition, so it's not going to look good, probably.
It's still going to be blown up a lot.
Yeah, it's not going to look great. I mean, most people say anything standard definition on a pretty big, like, HD TV these days doesn't look good anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, I mean, just that, and especially when it's, you know, a still picture, you know, where you're sort of scrutinizing it in that way, it isn't going to look good, but it's not going to look, like, comically bad, I guess. And I guess the point with having it on your Wii, much like with these DSi sort of tools, is to mess around with it and draw things on it and have a laugh with it. So it's kind of frivolous.
It's kind of like a return to the Game Boy camera, which is cool. I mean, I'm not totally opposed to that.
The Game Boy camera, but the Game Boy camera never made it to the console. They almost did.
Yeah.
But then rumor is thanks to a spate of school violence.
Yeah.
Is this with the Perfect Dark camera integration thing? Yeah. That they would sort of scuppered it at the last minute because the fear is that, you know, you are shooting your friends in a sense.
Well, that's what the rumor is. They never said.
Yeah, I mean, with that sort of thing, I guess it's always easy to make that speculation, but whether it's
especially considering the timing. But
yeah,
but
I mean, you could see why it's 0.3 megapixel, you know, because it's not. You know, it's not really a camera so much as it is sort of like a, you know, image sort of fun. It's like an image utility for fun, really. So, yeah, and obviously on the screens of the DS, I mean, standard definition for a television is more than enough. You know, for purely just viewing it, even with the bigger screen of the DSi. So that's fine. But anyway, we know that now. That's all cleared up. Another thing about the DSi is Iwata said that though the North American and European sort of subsidiaries handle these things themselves, ostensibly at least,
they're still NCL slaves.
Yeah, that an autumn or later 2009 launch for DSi in those territories would be, quote, too late. So I guess maybe Nintendo of America were kind of passing things a bit when they said well into 2009, like they don't mean on New Year's Day. Yeah. In terms of they may be trying to sort of prevent any or minimize any dampening on the holiday sales of the light before they unveil the... we've already heard the European people say that they're expecting it in the spring. And it may well be that it comes just as soon in America, in fact.
That would be awesome. Get rid of the Fett, finally.
Oh, you're still on the Fett? There's another one in the Fett Club.
Yeah, well, the wife here jacked the DS Lite when we got one of those, so I'm stuck with the freaking piece of shit.
See, I still prefer the Fett to the Lite simply because of something about it makes me feel more comfortable holding it.
I feel more
comfortable holding it, if that makes sense.
I don't know.
Well, I guess the familiarity element at this point, you've had that since launch, right? So that's
I got it launch day with the only game that was available worth playing at the
Super Mario 64.
No. I said worth playing. The only game worth playing on at the time, the Metroid Prime Hunters demo for a game that came out 4 years later.
Nice.
It wasn't 4 years, it was 2 years later, wasn't it?
It was like 3. Like,
it was 18 months. No, I think it was 18 months because it came out in the holiday of 2004 and then Metroid Prime Hunters came out early 2006. So it was like 18
Still,
months.
Way too long.
It was pretty long, yeah, when you're bundling a demo with the launch of the system. So, yeah, that looks like they... that. So the North America's probably... they probably would have liked to pretend it doesn't exist at all, but it will
exist.
They
probably wish it doesn't exist at all.
And it probably will launch fairly early on. But other things, Iwata was showing off some of the actual... from the DSiWare, which is really the most interesting thing about the DSi in general. I think we can agree on that.
Oh, yeah. The
whole downloadable games element. First thing is, this is from information translated from our Japan correspondent, James Charlton. We've got new art style games for
the DS. See, I thought this was big.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. I mean, when you say new, I don't know whether they're going to be entirely new or like riffs on some of the bit generation games that are already on GBA, but I think that's good. I mean, Johnny suggested it on last week's episode, if I remember correctly, and here it is in practice, and I think that'll be pretty nice. And then you've got a new WarioWare game using the camera, so it's a bit of like an iToy type thing, but in a WarioWare setting.
Well, I find that interesting because they're kind of going out there with the new WarioWare games. There's that one, and then there's the other one where it's Made in Me.
Yeah, that's right. There was some. I mean, Made in Me is a retail DS game, so
right.
It'll work on all your DSs. But they did actually at the same event, Iwata did mention that it's going to have quite an interesting feature. It's going to have connectivity to so that when you can make the whole point of it, obviously, is you're making your own micro games, like the ones that you would play in a usual WarioWare title. But what you'll be able to do is actually download something through WiiWare, where you'll actually be able to play the games that you made on your DS on your Wii. So that's really
awesome.
Quite noteworthy that they're really doing something with connectivity, which they just have been so reticent to do over a period of time now.
Nice.
I mean, I'm not sure it's the best use of it. I mean, is it really that much better to play these micro games on
yes.
your Wii than
yes,
it is on
it
your
is.
DS?
Well, what if you could distribute these micro games?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the thing. It might be the best way to share like the micro games with friends. It might actually be easier to do it through Wii than through DS because the DS is sort of online infrastructure.
What if they set up a service?
Oh, you're dreaming. You're dreaming.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know how far they want
to
take
coming.
It. Really.
It's coming. But you
One thing they are doing is quite weird. Also on the DSiWare side, so also you'll be able to download like little packs of WarioWare micro games that come from previous games in the series.
Oh.
These are going to be cheaper at about 200 Nintendo points. So you're really going full on with WarioWare with all this new stuff. A lot of new WarioWare things. I guess it'll be quite interesting. I mean the iToy style one. I mean. I think you could sort of you take a photo of yourself, you kind of play as your silhouette in some way. But
see, I'm basically sold on both those WarioWare games because I think they both sound interesting in their own right.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing with WarioWare. Obviously, it's got the intrinsically sort of fun kind of part to it, but they always have to try and put a new spin on it.
And I think the last DS game, Touched, was probably the weakest game in the franchise, easily.
My understanding goes it was kind of rushed, and it wasn't even done by Intelligent Systems, was it? Like, you normally do the WarioWare games, but it was done by somebody else. I think I heard that, so that may well be the case. I mean, it's very much sort of applying the WarioWare template to touchscreen interaction
right.
without too
and
much
versus,
else.
Say, what was it? WarioWare Twisted, which came out right after, which is probably the best entry in the series.
I really like it. I think it's excellent.
That game is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I felt that was a lot better than the Wii one.
Yeah, the Wii one's okay, but I'm not a huge fan.
It doesn't really do anything all that different.
No, not at all.
Yeah. So that's kind of exciting that they're running headlong. I think they may want a bit of a more well-developed DSiWare kind of lineup for when they sell it in the West, whenever that's going to be, because I think that's really going to be the selling point, is the fact that you've got these downloadable games that you'll be able to play.
Right.
I think the North American market could be a bit tougher to crack, and sort of a better lineup of those games could be one way to achieve that. I mean, what's here so far is encouraging, but they're only talking about it after or on the day of its launch. I think a bit of a lead-in would be nice for next time.
I wouldn't be surprised if they eventually wind up talking about downloadable, you know, GBA, GBC.
Yeah, I mean, you think it can only be so far behind, don't you? You know, you think it's fairly inevitable. I guess that will happen. I mean, it may well be the case that at first they want to emphasize the fact that you've got new exclusive content, and then perhaps once it's matured a little, they'll move on towards that down the line.
The reverse of what happened on the Wii.
Yeah, the reverse with the Wii.
So maybe that's telling a little bit of, you know, launch sales of, or, you know, launch numbers of WiiWare games when they first launched that service. You know, maybe it was really weak and they felt they could have done it better. And now that they have the opportunity to do so, they're going to switch it up with the DSi and launch with the new stuff and then bring the old stuff.
And alas, we had to leave it there, unfortunately, because persistent connection problems at my end finally overwhelmed us totally, meaning that the rest of the new segment that would have included the aforementioned discussion of Wii Music's critical and commercial reception, Sega picking up another externally developed core-focused title for the first half of next year in the form of The Conduit, and Disaster Dave Crisis living up to its name in the European sales chart had to be cut short. So, sadly, all that's left to say is to say sorry for shortchanging everyone a bit with this abbreviated episode, and to give my great thanks to Nick, Chester and James for coming on the show and being so extraordinarily patient. Once again, we do need your listener mail questions, comments and suggestions, so please send them to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. They're all very, very much appreciated. So, from all of us, it's bye for now, but we'll catch up with you next time.
The last thing I heard was, I'm not able to finish that sentence. And then that was it.